Susie, good morning to you.
Good morning, Chief Justice, members of the court. This is another case involving the application, the misapplication of Nebraska Revised Statute 29-12.04, drive-by shooting statute. As I'm sure the court's aware, I was here as counsel for State v. Sanders. I was here for Sanders v. Frakes, and I'm making the same argument here on Groundhog Day. But this case is different from those other two cases, and I will show you the distinction later. But first, I want to address the issue of the Rule 109E that was raised in the state's brief, filing of the 109E. And I've been here before a lot of times. I'm very familiar with Rule 109E. This was not an accident. I did this deliberately, and I want to tell you why. And it is because before you get to Rule 109E, you are required to only appeal the finding that was made by the trial court. In this particular case, the trial court made no finding concerning the constitutionality either for or against 29-12-12.04. The issue that we raised in the assignments of error was the failure to grant an evidentiary hearing. That's it. I mean, that's what happened. When you get to the question of challenging the constitutionality, I raised it as, look, let's just cut to the chase, and that this court could take judicial notice and do exactly what it did, judicial notice of the Census Bureau, and find the statute facially unconstitutional. I do not think that that is a hard call. I do not think it requires an extensive evidentiary hearing. If you remanded for a determination of whether the statute was unconstitutional, I would do exactly what I'm doing here right now. I would be asking the district court to take judicial notice of the census. If the district court refused to take judicial notice, then I would subpoena in the records custodian. I believe it's from the University of Creighton Law School. I believe they have a formal repository for official documents, and we would do it that way. But it would be doing exactly the same thing that I'm doing here. And the reason I think this court can bypass all that is because this court has done it in other cases without any type of 109E notice, and it did it in the case I cited in the reply brief, State versus Gotzel, in which no notice was given, and the court says, wait a minute, we're looking at this case, this self-defense statute is unconstitutional. So I think that that's a red herring. I don't think it applies. I think the remedy, if you want to go long form, is to remand for an evidentiary hearing, and I'll make the evidentiary record. But I would also make the evidentiary record regarding the as-applied, because the as-applied claims all came about after this very first case. Mr. Ross was the very first case that I can find of anybody who was ever charged with this offense. And it is very difficult to make an as-applied racial discrimination claim with the very first one, because you say, hey, what are you talking about? Well, exists in this record is the fact that all of the people who get charged with this, and what I found with, or get convicted of this, with one exception, have been African American or Hispanic. I mean, it's amazing. In terms of
the impact, you say in this record, you mean in the allegations of your petition?
In the allegations of my petition, yeah. And I've alleged in the it was in the petition, it was also in the motion to amend or alter, where I made reference to some other cases. Say, look, I want to supplement the record, and that was denied.
So you're not talking about the record of the proceedings?
I'm not talking about Mr. Ross's proceedings. I'm talking about my showing regarding what evidence I would present at an evidentiary hearing.
Thank you.
And you cited the cases in your amended motion for post-conviction relief. Is that what you're talking about?
Yes. Well, no, not in the amended motion, I'm sorry. I'm not 100% sure. I think I have one of them in there. But in the motion to amend the order, alter and amend, I include them in that one. And that's in part of this record. In State v. Sanders, this court was a layered claim. There were no standalone claims. Mr. Sanders, in his pro se petition, alleged ineffective assistance of counsel and then as prejudice alleged the existence of the unconstitutionality of the statute. This court short-circuited the analysis and went solely to the deficient performance of counsel and said, and I take it as a matter of law because it was not as a matter of fact, that it couldn't have been deficient performance because the claim was novel. I strongly dispute that analysis because I think whether or not you have this deficient performance is dependent upon what is in the mind of the attorney who actually made the decision not to file a motion to quash. Maybe he or she thought, hey, I can win this case at trial, it'll go faster. But the question about whether or not it was a real, reasonable strategy depends on what the strategy really was, and you can't determine that without an evidentiary hearing. Secondly, the question becomes, did the attorney actually know procedures necessary to raise a facial constitutionality challenge? And we have no record showing that. That's why this should be an evidentiary hearing in this case. But did the attorney know? When did he know it? What was his or her thought processes? Those are factual questions. They're not legal questions.
Counsel, does the fact that Mr. Ross's case is the first one you could find where charges had been brought under this statute, does this help your case or hurt it?
In what
regards? As it regards the novel constitutional challenge.
I think it helps me tremendously because as a defense attorney for 35 years, when I looked at this statute, my first response is, I've never seen anything. I have never seen a statute that is limited to two counties in the state of Nebraska. That's the first question. That is very, very odd. And that would trigger me to say, well, can you do that?
So are you suggesting that we revisit the holding in Sanders as it regards the novelty of the constitutional claim?
I think the use of the word novelty was overbroad. I think that the fact that you have novelty, if that's what you want to use as a phrase.
Well, we didn't make that the term, right?
I mean, you pulled it out of a case from another jurisdiction. But the problem with novelty is not that that frees the attorney from doing his research. What I say is the existence of novelty imposes on the attorney the burden to find out, what is this? Why can you do that? I think it goes the other way. I think a finding of novelty doesn't release the attorney, it places an additional burden on him or her to research and find out whether this is
novel. Novelty of the claim or novelty of the statute?
Well, they're part and parcel of the same thing. When the statute has something that's really odd, you look at it and you say, gee, now I need to find out whether that's okay.
Okay.
That's really common when you have things where you have language that may be ambiguous. So does it cover this conduct?
At the beginning of this entire case, the charges were filed and the case proceeded. There was no allegation that these statutes were unconstitutional.
Well, that's not exactly correct, Judge. He was charged with second-degree murder 2 weeks before trial. 2 weeks before trial, they filed a directive. This is where it gets confusing. They filed an amended information in court, in the district court. I think that when you file a direct information as an amended and you change the charges, it has the weight of being a complaint. If you file a direct information in district court, district court originally is sitting as a magistrate's court and have a preliminary hearing and you go there. The record in this case does not reflect that there was ever anything done after the probable cause hearing was held. And it doesn't indicate Mr. Ross pled not guilty. It doesn't recognize that anything happened. They just went straight to trial.
Isn't going to trial a presumption of a plea of not guilty?
I mean, legally that's what happens.
Yeah.
But in terms of being able to say, this is the date when he should have done it,
When do you raise your challenges to the statute under which he's charged?
I'm sorry?
When do you raise your challenges to the statute under which the defendant is charged?
Well, if you're a good lawyer, you raise it at the time, the first chance you can, and every time you can, and I don't object to the instructions.
So now the first time it's coming up is under these claims for post-conviction relief alleged on 6 grounds. And the first 5 grounds are not alleging ineffective assistance of counsel. You're now attacking the constitutionality of the statute in a post-conviction proceeding. Can you do that?
If the statute's unconstitutional, absolutely. Absolutely. If the grounds suddenly become apparent, in other words, if the ineffective assistance of counsel is denied because it was novel, and now, here, 5 years later, you say, wait a minute, it's not novel, it's on its face unconstitutional, you can go to the substantive merits of the claim. It would be like you've got new case law, whatever you have. It was not, you have a number of cases in which there are more, in fact, there are more statutes that have been held unconstitutional by this court based on local legislation than any other provision of the Nebraska Constitution.
In a post-conviction proceeding?
Me?
In a post-conviction proceeding?
Never had it before. It's the first case. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Ms. Klein, good morning to you.
May it please the Court, Mr. Chief Justice. I'm Kimberly Klein, Assistant Attorney General representing the state in this matter. Governors, I think this case is governed exactly by your ruling in Sanders. It's the same issue and the same procedural posture, and the only distinction, and you said in Sanders, it's a distinction without a difference, is that Ross was charged under the original incarnation of this statute. Sanders was charged under the 2010 amendments, and you said that the challenge, that you know, a constitutional challenge which would have been mounted under either one of those would have been novel in either case. So, and Ross's Ross's crime and his trial both predate Sanders by a good year. So if it was novel for Sanders, it was at least equally as novel for Ross under these circumstances.
But I think Mr. Soucy said looking the statute in it only applies to two counties. That should have set off an alarm. Or even one county, I think, is included in his argument. What's your response? If it had applied only to one county at the time of this amended information?
Your Honor, I don't know what... Truthfully, I don't really have a response because the district court never got to that issue. The district court said everything was defaulted pursuant to Sanders and took the Sanders ruling and said, this is exactly the same thing. We just don't get to that issue. Another day, another time, maybe, but not under these circumstances.
Procedurally, in a post-conviction, can you raise for the first time the constitutionality of a statute without alleging ineffective assistance of counsel?
I would think not, because you would have, if your allegation is unconstitutional on its face, then clearly not, because if it's unconstitutional on its face, it's because the statute is written such that no application of it would be constitutional, which means that it should be, quote, readily apparent on its face, which means it needs to be challenged at the district court level.
The constitutional challenge was wrapped up as an ineffective assistance claim, though, as well, correct?
A failure
to raise the Constitution.
Right, they were kind of melded together.
And that's how we get to Sanders, right?
That's how we get to Sanders.
Is there factual evidence that would be required to resolve that challenge? I think Mr. Soucy is saying a competent lawyer and so forth would have noticed this was an odd statute.
Well, it seems to me the thrust of the argument is this, that I first will attack the constitutionality of the statute, and if it's determined that it's unconstitutional, then a good lawyer would have raised that at the beginning, and therefore I did receive ineffective assistance of counsel for not raising the constitutionality of that statute. He's taking it in the reverse order. And so the first question is, if these statutes are unconstitutional on their face or as applied or whatever, then you have a potential ineffective assistance of counsel claim for not raising it. That's the theory of this case, isn't it?
Yeah, and I think that's the same theory that he raised in Sanders, and you said because it is a novel constitutional challenge, then deficient performance.
But we didn't address the constitutionality of the statute. We addressed the ineffective assistance of counsel claim first and concluded that it was novel and therefore counsel wasn't ineffective.
Right.
And then we didn't reach the constitutionality of this particular statute.
Right. And
do you see the theory that I'm espousing is that if you first can get the court to determine as a matter of law that this statute's unconstitutional, then it is not novel.
Right.
And then counsel was ineffective because it wasn't a novel claim. It was a failure to simply raise the constitutionality of the statute at the proper time, and therefore defendant received ineffective assistance.
Well, I think in a way you're sort of, that's sort of going at it backwards, because if Ross was indeed the first case that was tried under this, then the claim had to have been a novel challenge to it, because nobody, A, had been charged under it, and there was therefore no, I guess, basis for which a challenge could have been mounted. And because that's, I think, the procedural posture that Ross...
But there are six claims raised here, five of which we don't think you can reach because they're not before us, right?
Right.
And so we only get to the sixth challenge, and that's ineffective assistance of counsel.
Right. And the ineffective claim is resolved pursuant to Sanders. Unless there are additional questions, we think the district court correctly ruled on the motion, and we would ask that that ruling be affirmed. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Is there time for rebuttal? There is no time for rebuttal. The next case of the day is